This is 2013. This is November 2013. On November 22nd, 1963, almost exactly 50 years ago, President John Fitzgerald Kennedy was assassinated in Dealey Plaza in Dallas, Texas. There has been so much controversy surrounding this assassination. And so one of the things we're doing this month is we're talking about some of those controversies. And joining us is one of my favorite guests of all time. His name is Russ Baker. He is an author. He is an investigative journalist. He is the publisher of an online investigative journalism site called Who What Why at whowhatwhy.com. His latest book is called, I think it's your latest book, Russ. It's called Family of Secrets, The Bush Dynasty, America's Invisible Government and the Hidden History of the Last 50 Years. Russ Baker, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thanks, Pat. Always good to be with you.
Well, I love talking to you. You're one of my very favorite people of all time. And I never, ever, ever talk with you without learning something. And so I think that makes you even more special. So, you know, this to me, as soon as I was thinking about the Kennedy assassination, of course, I was thinking about you because it was the weirdest thing that in your book, Family of Secrets, which is about the Bush family, but in your book, all of a sudden, there's a connection between George Herbert Walker Bush, the first President Bush, and the Kennedy assassination. And since then, I think, you know, so many people responded to that part of the book that you've been doing all kinds of digging into things, and you've come up with some fascinating information. I think right now you've got 9 parts that are published at whowhatwhy.com about the Kennedy assassination, right?
Yes, we're going to do the final one this coming week.
Well, that fits. Is it going to be published on the 22nd?
Yeah, probably before, actually, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's jump right into it. We all had thought, of course, that George W. Bush was appointed the head of the CIA without any real experience, and that he wasn't head of the CIA for a terribly long time. But you discovered in your book that George Herbert Walker Bush had a real relationship with the CIA, and for quite some period of time. What did you find out?
Yeah, well, the background on this, Pat, just for anybody who's not familiar with Family of Secrets, is that I was indeed just doing a book about the Bushes, trying to figure out how George W. Bush had come to power, then becoming interested in how his father had come to power and why, what they were like and who had influenced them and the decisions they made. And in the course of researching the father, I started discovering all these intriguing facts that are not well known at all and are missing essentially from Mr. Bush's own memoirs and from history books, and that is concerning how he came to be the CIA director, as you mentioned. He was put in 1976 by Gerald Ford. They mm-hmm. described him as an outsider without any experience, which on its face didn't seem to make any sense, but the media kind of just, as they tended to, just left it at that and didn't dig any further. And 1976 was right the height of the Church Committee hearings into CIA improprieties, the CIA assassination programs, where they were going around the world and without authorization from Congress, basically participating in the overthrow and the whacking of leaders, in some cases democratically elected leaders. And so in this period of great peril for the old CIA establishment, of all the people they could bring in, they bring in this fellow who they say has no experience or qualifications. And so, of course, I became fascinated with that, and I thought, well, there must be some explanation. I spent years digging into this, and what I discovered, there was an explanation, and it turned out he actually, there was a reason to put him in. And the reason was that for many, many years prior to 1976, and literally for decades, he had been secretly a CIA operative. He had been essentially under very deep cover, operating, running oil companies, being a congressman, and being a diplomat, but in fact being essentially in the employ of this super secret and poorly regulated spy outfit. And so that's what got me interested in him. And as I went deeper and deeper, I discovered that he was in the CIA in the 60s and even in the 50s. And then I discovered that he claimed not to remember where he was at the time that he heard that John F. Kennedy was shot. And of course, that took me in a whole new direction. I wanted to know, where was he?
Yeah, and that was completely impossible. plausible because everybody remembers. Anybody who was of an age that they could remember remembers where they were when the president was assassinated. Let me back up for just a minute, because if George Herbert Walker Bush was under deep cover, it seems as if some of the information that you've discovered, it's using his name. He's not using some fake name that you would expect a CIA operative to use. How do you explain that?
Right. So there really is one key document that came out under one of the various mass releases of documents pertaining to the Kennedy assassination, and this is an FBI memo from J. Edgar Hoover regarding a briefing, an interagency briefing, the day after the Kennedy assassination, and in there, and I assume when Hoover did that memo, that was intended to be internal only. Mm. He says, we've had a briefing with people from two other intelligence agencies, and one of them, he says, is Mr. George Bush of the CIA. Now, subsequently, many, many years later, that document came out in public. I think Mr. Bush was not happy about that. He was actually running for president at the time, 1988, and they tried to deny that was him. The CIA said no comment, but as we subsequently learned, it almost certainly was him. And that, of course, is very, very interesting, that not only could he not remember where he was that day, but he was actually working for the CIA and actually was cited in a J. Edgar Hoover memo whose subject line is assassination of President John F. Kennedy.
Unbelievable. All right, Russ, I'm going to take a break, and we'll come back. And one of the first things we'll talk about is what you discovered, how you found out where George Herbert Walker Bush actually was on that day. So Russ Baker is my guest. Once again, his website, if you have not yet signed up for updates, if you don't go to that website, you should. It's called Who, What, Why. And the web address is whowhatwhy.com. Whowhatwhy.com. And as you might guess from a title such as that, it is a journalistic website. It's not just Russ's work. It's the work of a number of investigative journalists. And you'll read things there that you won't read anywhere else. Good afternoon. I'm Pat Thurston. My guest is Russ Baker. Russ is an investigative journalist. He is an author. Of course, a lot of the book that we're referring to here when we talk about the Kennedy assassination is Family of Secrets. Russ sort of didn't realize he was going to be looking into the Kennedy assassination when he embarked on this book, which was about the Bush family, the Bush dynasty. But he did run into the Kennedy assassination, and the connection really was George Herbert Walker Bush. And so, Russ, what we were talking about before going to the break was that Bush is the one person in the entire United States of America who was alive and cognizant at that time who didn't remember where he was when he heard the news that Kennedy was assassinated. But you know where he was, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I spent a long time trying to figure this out, and in Family of Secrets, I actually do reveal it, that in fact he was in Dallas. And we even provide the documentation proving that he was in Dallas. And then there's another very interesting document showing that about an hour and 15 minutes after the assassination, he was now in another place near Dallas, at which point he then called the FBI. This is another declassified FBI document, and it shows him, and this time there's no question as to whether it's him or not because it has his full name and his address in Houston and identifies him as being an oil man. And it says that he called from Tyler, Texas, a short plane flight from Dallas, and he said, I may have some information on who shot Kennedy. This is before Oswald had been named. Now, what's so fascinating about this is here we know absolutely that George H.W. Bush, the man who would become president of the United States, become so-called Bush 41, that we know absolutely that he was very interested in the Kennedy assassination. Yeah. There are not many people among us who called the FBI to say, I might know who shot the president.
Right, right. And to think that he would then, at a later time, say, oh, I don't know where I was. I mean, that just defies credulity. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. And so this is a major, major oops on his part. And sadly, the media in this country is so pathetic that with all these interviews that he's given over the years, nobody has ever, that I know of, asked him this. I've tried to get an interview with him, and he won't talk to me. But this is why I, by the way, why I started our website, whowhatwhy.com, because I just got so fed up, and I said, my God, the journalism in this country is really pretty bad. If you don't think it's important enough to ask a president of the United States why he seemed to know something about the assassination of another president, I don't know what your standards for a significant story are.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. So at the time, Bush was, he says that he's an oil man, and he is an oil man, but he's also, he's working with the CIA. What's the connection between the CIA and Kennedy? I mean, there's hostility. They don't like each other, right?
There is a lot there, and again, I mean, I have five chapters in Family of Secrets that's just on this subject, because
yeah.
I became so fascinated, I thought, I've got to figure this out. It wasn't that I thought I knew. I didn't think I knew, and I just dug and connected a lot of dots. But essentially, there was a power struggle going on between the CIA and John F. Kennedy. And he's not the only one, by the way. As I document in Family of Secrets, Richard Nixon ended up having a power struggle with the CIA, as did Jimmy Carter. The rest of the presidents basically just left it alone and said, this is just too big for me to take on. But Kennedy very much did so. He fired Alan Dulles. I mean, this guy was if anybody, was really the father of the CIA. He fired him. And he fired some of his top lieutenants. He pushed them all out after the Bay of Pigs disaster. And one of Alan Dulles' closest friends was a man named Prescott Bush. Prescott Bush, the grandfather of George W. Bush and the father of George H.W. Bush, very close friend of Alan Dulles, and actually longtime business associate in the investment banking world, working very closely to represent certain corporate interests who have relied very much on the CIA and the U.S. military to secure their properties in foreign countries where they didn't like what the government was doing. So, and we actually even, Pat, we even have a letter that Prescott Bush sent to Alan Dulles' widow where he says, I was so angry at Kennedy and his brother over what they did to Alan.
So Alan's been fired. Kennedy's still the president. What was the fear of the CIA at that time? Were they afraid that Kennedy was going to somehow dismantle the CIA or take all the power that the CIA had away? What was it, the other than the fact that he fired these people, that would have caused them to want him dead?
Yeah, I mean, he basically said something about wanting to break the CIA into 1,000 pieces and cast it to the wind. That
would have been a good idea.
Statement.
Yeah.
And then he also, see, the other thing, Pat, is that this is something that has been falsified by our major historians, our academic institutions, and so on. They've attempted to portray him as a kind of monolithic Cold War hardliner. The fact is, if you go back to the early 1950s when he was in the U.S. Senate, he was giving speeches already where he was talking about the U.S. keeping its nose out of other countries, letting these third world and developing countries go their own way, and if they wanted to have some kind of a mixed government, there were experiments in a number of countries which were sort of, you might say, quasi-socialistic. And he basically said, look, these countries have to do their own thing. It's not our business to tell them what to do. And, of course, this just infuriated and alarmed all these people long before he was president. So I think they were already watching him. And Prescott Bush, we have to keep in mind, was a fellow senator at the time, was very much the representative of all these big mining interests and timber interests and,
right,
and oil interests that were in all these third world countries,
right,
just taking the resources for next to nothing. And so they were already aware that if this guy became president, he could be a problem.
You know, it's just amazing to think about what has happened since that time and what might have happened had he been successful in dismantling the CIA. You know, all the things that we've done in foreign countries, not in the interest of national security, but in the interest of these foreign corporations who wanted to take the resources of other nations. Chiquita Banana comes to mind. So, but I don't want to go off on a tangent because it's so easy to do. So what about the Cubans? I mean, every time we hear about the Kennedy assassination, there's the issue of the Cubans. What's the connection there? And is that connection connected to Bush and the CIA and the assassination?
Yeah, there are circumstantial but significant indications that George H.W. Bush in 1963 was a key CIA handler of Cuban exiles who were basically in play via the CIA to try to overthrow Castro. And we see Bush's financially unsuccessful company, Zapata Offshore Oil Drilling Company, a tiny company with very few resources, very few customers, ambitiously putting oil rigs in key spots. They put one very close off the shore of Cuba, and he was employing Cuban exiles to work on that rig. And to many, many people, that logically looks like a CIA-forward operation. We also see that General Fabian Escalante, one of the heads of Cuban military intelligence, who had excellent resources and infiltrated the Cuban exile groups, that he described, that he said that they knew George H.W. Bush to be one of the two kind of key handlers involved with collecting money off the books from wealthy oil people and financiers in Texas to fund these black unauthorized CIA operations against Cuba. These were operations.
I wonder where Ollie North got the idea.
Well, there you go. And who did Ollie North work for? He worked for George H.W. Bush.
There you go.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about Oswald. I'm watching my clock right now because we've only got like about a minute. But I'll tell you, and I think I can get this done in a minute, there were two paragraphs that you wrote that I thought were brilliant, and they the kind of epitomize how I feel about this. And they are, by the time the de Morenschilds left the United States for Haiti in May 1963, Lee Harvey Oswald had been turned into a man with multiple personas, all of them capable of killing Kennedy. Oswald hated Kennedy, either because he, Oswald, admired Castro because he was anti-Castro. Perhaps Oswald was angry at Kennedy over the Bay of Pigs fiasco, or else he just liked to take pot shots at important people. He was fond of guns, a bit violent, and even sometimes beat up his wife. He was a potential time bomb with a short fuse. There was something in the lurid saga of Oswald to fit almost any theory, and therefore to confirm none. Whether Oswald was complicit or not in the process, his background and activities had been so muddled that no one would ever figure him out, or settle for sure whose side he had been on, or determine whether he was acting on his own or taking orders when he fired at Kennedy, if in fact he did. So I want to talk about Oswald when we return. Russ Baker, my guest. The website again is whowhatwhy.com.
Is caged by frail and fragile bars, restless by day and by night, rants and rages at the stars. God help the beast in me.
Good afternoon. I'm Pat Thurston. My guest is Russ Baker. Russ Baker is the author of Family of Secrets. And it's an amazing book. It is an absolutely amazing book about the Bush family, the Bush dynasty. And a small part of the book touches upon the Kennedy assassination, because Russ discovered a connection between George Herbert Walker Bush, the first President Bush, and the Kennedy assassination. That's one of the things that we're focusing on right now. But Russ, I said as we were going, oh, by the way, the website is whowhatwhy.com. As we were going out, you know, I was talking a little bit about Lee Harvey Oswald, who was arrested for the assassination and then killed a short time later by Jack Ruby. Oswald, tell us what you know about this guy. I mean, he's a weird little duck, and he's got connections all over the darn place, has traveled to a number of places. He was under investigation by the FBI, as I understand it. He was in Mexico for a time. What can you tell us about Oswald?
Well, I'm learning more and more all the time. I've got a fair bit in Family of Secrets, and still more I'm putting together. One of the things that interests me the most in relation to this Bush connection is that for about 6 months of the year prior to the shooting of Kennedy, Lee Harvey Oswald was essentially under the wing of a man, a Russian immigrant, anti-communist by the name of George de Morenschild. Yeah. This man and his wife, Jeanne, were in and out of Lee and Marina Oswald's lives constantly, literally in their house, driving them around, introducing them to people, even babysitting. And George de Morenschild is a fascinating figure because of very clear intelligence connections that he had. And what I find so interesting is then to learn that George de Morenschild also was for more than 20 years preceding that a friend of George H.W. Bush.
Well, and that's just too coincidental to be coincidental. It's unbelievable. And this de Morenschild, his whole history is really interesting. Some of what you have published recently on whowhatwhy.com, you talk about Haiti. So we've got Cuba, we've got Mexico, we got Haiti. De Morenschild traveled to Haiti, and this had to do with Papa Doc Duvalier?
Yeah, I mean, there's look, these intelligence organizations, and the problem with the term intelligence is it suggests that people are intelligent or doing something useful. Is they're really what they are is their cloak and dagger outfits, and they got a lot of these people, at least back then, before they started relying entirely on listening to all of us. They used to have what they called human intelligence people, and I and a lot of them, you know, they have to be undercover, so they're not even ever showing up on the books. And I think that's the case of a George H.W. Bush and a case of a George de Morenschild, very much of a multiple arm's length relationship. And so de Morenschild was always traveling to these places ostensibly on business for very wealthy Texans who were sending him to these places where then there would be a coup attempt and so forth. I mean, he was in Guatemala while they were training for the Bay of Pigs, ostensibly on a hiking vacation. He was in Haiti at a time that a man that he knew was ostensibly involved with a coup against Duvalier. I mean, he just again and again and again would show up in these places. He would go behind the Iron Curtain to Yugoslavia, and then you'd see him in these declassified CIA reports. So he clearly was some kind of an asset, and in fact, he himself admitted that the reason he became involved with Lee Harvey Oswald was because the CIA asked him to do it, and they asked him to do it sometime after Oswald returned from the Soviet Union. And so here's this guy, lifelong friend of George H.W. Bush, squiring the man who will later be accused of killing the President of the United States, and then silenced, of course, Oswald before he could do anything. George de Morenschild, some years later, and we get into that if you want, becomes panicked that something's closing in on him. He writes a letter to George H.W. Bush at the CIA and says, "George, I need your help. Something bad is happening to me." Bush writes back and says, "Oh, I checked and nothing bad is happening to you." And then several months later, George de Morenschild is dead, ostensibly a suicide.
Oh, my God. You know, the thing is that what's really creepy about all of this is, you know, we always hear conspiracy theory when we're talking about the Kennedy assassination, because there's so little. The investigation that was done so quickly, and it was done on such a surface level. There are documents that still have not been released that are being held close to the vest. But as you piece some of these things together, what becomes so frightening and so disturbing, and maybe the explanation for why these documents are being held in secret, is that, yeah, there was a conspiracy. And the conspiracy involved our own government taking out our own president. That doesn't mean that it was, you know, the government, everybody in the government got together and said, oh, Kennedy's got to go. But elements within our government had to play a role in here. There's also this, the Zapruder film, I think it was, if I remember correctly, where it shows a Secret Service agent who was at the motorcade, who was supposed to be on the car, on the Kennedy car, on the president's car, who was pulled off the car sort of at the last minute there, allowing, what, the shot to hit the president?
Yeah, I'm not sure that's the Zapruder film. We did just we've posted that before. We just reposted that. That's right up at the top of whowhatwhy.com. But you can see this man somehow didn't get the memo. You know, it's like there's all these Secret Service agents around Lyndon Johnson, but there's nobody around Kennedy. Yeah. And this guy is trying to do his job, and he's trying to get on the car, which is what he's supposed to do. Had he been on the car, he very likely would have been the target of these shots instead. And he is called off. If you watch this thing carefully, he's being called off by a superior in a car behind, and he is visibly upset, of course, and he puts his hands up and he shrugs and he does it three times. He says, something is not right here.
Yeah. God. So disturbing. And can you quickly, in a minute, tell us about Umbrella Man?
Let's see. Well, so just at the moment that the shots rain into the car, there is a man standing on the grassy strip next to the car, and he's pumping an umbrella. This is a bright, sunny day, and he's furiously pumping this umbrella. And so there is some speculation as to what are we looking at there. Some people have tried to, as with everything else, to convince us that there's nothing to see here, folks. You know, oh, that was just a guy just who was, you know, doing something weird but had nothing to do with it. But the fact is, we've run this on whowhatwhy.com. If you just go into the search box, you type umbrella man, you can actually see he's with another guy. The other guy has what appears to be a walkie-talkie in his pocket. And after Kennedy's dead, while everybody else is running up the grassy knoll, they sit down together on the curb.
All right, stick with us. Russ Baker, my guest. We'll be right back. WhoWhatWhy.com is the website. The book is called Family of Secret.
In the timbers of Canario, the wolves are running red. The winter was so hot and cold, rose 10 feet beneath the ground. Don't murder me. I beg of you, don't murder me.
A 2013 Toyota Prius, courtesy of Stevens Creek Toyota, and sponsored by Grayton Resort and Casino. Listen to the KGO Morning News this week at 7:15 for a chance to win tickets to see Journey and the Steve Miller Band for one of their two Bay Area shows, and to qualify for the Toyota Prius. For another chance to win, text Prius to 35253. Standard data rates apply. For more information, visit kgoradio.com/Prius. I'm Pat Thurston. My guest is Russ Baker. Russ is an investigative journalist. He is an author. He wrote the book Family of Secrets, where he happened upon this connection between George Herbert Walker Bush and the Kennedy assassination. He's done a tremendous amount of research since then and has published. You got to go to the website, whowhatwhy.com, and read some of this and get a copy of the book, Family of Secrets. You won't be disappointed. Russ, I want to go back to the Cubans. I'm not sure where I read this, but I read it today, that there actually was a Cuban exile present in Dealey Plaza. It seems like, I mean, there were all these people who were there to make sure that this operation went down correctly. It's the only conclusion I can come to. Can you tell us anything about the Cuban exile? And do you think that what happened is that Oswald did shoot Kennedy, but that he was a patsy? Do you think there was more than one shooter? What do you think actually happened when the assassination took place?
As best as I can figure this out, well, first of all, in answer to your question, yes, at least one Cuban, possibly more, based on a multiplicity of independent accounts of people having driven to Dallas or come in various ways, particularly from Florida, and several individuals identified as having been there. I think what we were looking at, typically, I think this was a full-blown coup. And if you look at the other coups, and we think that many of the same people were involved in the coup in Guatemala, the coup in Iran, and so forth, and what you see is that they want to make sure the thing doesn't fail. It's very dangerous if the thing fails. And so you have all these compartmentalized individuals who are hired outside. They don't know who they're working for. They just being paid by some independent person. And you have this triangulated thing. As far as Lee Harvey Oswald goes, I do not think he was involved. I believe that he was, in fact, an intelligence operative. And, in fact, very interesting, and this is not well known, but the Texas state authorities, including the attorney general, actually stated in a memo to the Warren Commission itself, I think, and the FBI, that they had determined that Lee Harvey Oswald had pay numbers from certainly the FBI and I think the CIA as well, that he actually had either informant numbers or something else, and that he was receiving regular checks from these agencies. And you see, the thing is, this was a brilliant and foolproof plan, because once it becomes apparent that that he is in some way tied to these agencies, the first thing they've got to do is get rid of him and cover the whole thing up. And so whether or not they themselves were complicit in this thing, they had every motive to just suppress the whole matter.
What have you learned about Lyndon Baines Johnson, President Johnson? Did he have any involvement or any knowledge prior to the assassination happening? Or was he involved in the cover-up?
He had a tremendous motivation. He was involved in all kinds of corrupt dealings, and there were all sorts of investigations going on, Senate and the Justice Department and so on, that were headed toward, and there was already testimony coming out that were implicating him. He was going to end up, certainly removed from power and quite possibly prosecuted, could have ended up in jail for the rest of his life because there were so many crimes that he was involved with. Robert Caro in his best-selling book touches on some of that but doesn't go all the way in telling the full story. In any case, Johnson was deeply, deeply worried about the Kennedys. He also knew the writing on the wall was that they were planning to get rid of him, take him off the ticket in 64. And once he was off the ticket, then he was no longer protected and the full force of the law would have come down on him. I'm still doing more research on it. There's some already in the book. There are connections, again, believe it or not, between Lyndon Johnson and George H.W. Bush, George DeMoren, Sheldon, all of these same figures. It was a small, rather cozy family.
And my understanding is one of our listeners called in off the air in the beginning of our discussion and said that she believed that Richard Nixon was also in Dallas shortly before the assassination took place. Do you know anything about Nixon's connection to this?
That's in Family of Secrets. I have a whole section on that. My sense is that Richard Nixon was unwitting and that he was brought there for a couple of reasons. One was because since he had essentially almost become president in 1960 and was expected to become president in the future, that they would have leverage over him by putting him in a compromising position of being there when the man who had beaten him was gunned down. And also to send him a message that if he thought that when he became president he could do anything he wanted, this would be a rather chilling reminder that the presidents are not able to do just whatever they please.
Well, that's one of the other lessons from the entire book, and it's one that I hate.
I
always get mad at you, Russ.
It's very disturbing stuff. You know, I mean, the reality, Pat, is this. Most of us don't want to hear these things because it causes tremendous, psychological trauma. People always say to me, how do you stay mentally healthy? Well, you struggle with this stuff. You try to keep a balanced life, but it doesn't do us any good to be ostriches and to stick our head in the sand. We've been sold a bill of goods all of our lives, really, with this tremendous propaganda operation of American exceptionalism, that somehow this country only does good, that every problem is a small aberration, which is quickly corrected, and essentially it's all well and good. Well, no country is like that. And I just got back from travels abroad, and there is no other country I know of except maybe North Korea that works as aggressively to hide the truth and to propagandize its own citizens.
You know, Russ, you do a tremendous amount of work. I mean, that we talk about the Kennedy assassination. That's not the thrust of who, what, why. It just happens that this is the 50th anniversary, and you had information, and you did dig a lot of stuff up that you can reveal to us. But Who, What, Why is a fantastic site. And if you would, we've got a couple minutes left. Would you talk a little bit about why you created that site? And do you need people to help to support it through donations? Because how else do you make the money to do what you do?
Yeah. I started Who, What, Why. It is a nonprofit, and we don't take any ads. Started it up that way because I, and then later on other people joined me, we all felt that as professional journalists we were held back and we weren't able to go after the biggest people, the most powerful people in institutions, and to tell the full story, just because basically our bosses in the institutions were scared, and they said it's just too big. We just can't take this, the enormity of this lie on. We just can't do it. And I think that's the real story. That's what Who, What, Why is about. Yes, we do depend entirely on public donations, and folks are welcome to go to the site, and there's a button at the top that says donate, and we'd love to have your support. We also rely a lot on skilled volunteers with talents in particular areas, from publicity to social media to law, to help us do what we do. So we certainly welcome that. We've got a couple of ways people get in touch with us. Just go to the site and click where it says to get in touch. And also we're on Facebook, Who, What, Why, and we are on Twitter at Who, What, Why.
Okay. Russ, are you going to continue to follow the Kennedy story? I mean, there are still questions unanswered.
Yes, I am. We've got a lot of different projects going, and I, outside of Who, What, Why, also have some book and research projects going, and it's just too important, and it's just too fascinating. It is not ancient history. It is the prelude to what has come to pass now, and we've got to keep digging in order to understand where we're going.
And the book so puts that into perspective, and that's one of the reasons I think everybody should read Family of Secrets, because it really does do that, and then you get even more out of the website at Who, What, Why. Russ, delightful to talk with you again. It's been way too long. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Pat.
You betcha. That's Russ Baker. And again, the website, whowhatwhy.com. The book is called Family of Secrets. Let me tell you once again that you can win a 2013 Toyota Prius, courtesy of Stevens Creek Toyota, sponsored by Grayton Resort and Casino. Listen to the KGO Morning News this week, 7:15, for a chance to win tickets to see Journey and the Steve Miller Band for one of their two Bay Area shows. And you can qualify for the Toyota Prius. You can also have a chance to win by texting Prius to 35255. Standard data rates apply. For more information, KGOradio.com/Prius. This is KGO San Francisco, San Jose, Oakland.